Okay, so hopefully you're on board with trying this wait until you feel bad, relatively high dose home start. That said, anything that's new to us, I know, especially as ear docs, we have trouble sometimes implementing as far as, I'll speak for myself here at least. I think I am a creature of habit in knowing what clicks I'm making and where. So I do recommend sort of spending a few minutes to build out a workflow that works for you to set yourself up for success with all of these things. I don't want to pretend that I am a, genius or an expert in what is going to work from like an organizational psychology perspective to make sure that this is something that you can use. Obviously, tailor any workflow you build to what works for you, but I'm going to quickly run through the things that I have found necessary of what are the things that take me a lot of time or a lot of clicks that I've been able to sort of streamline and lower sort of the cognitive threshold to doing this correctly. Ideally, this needs to be something that when you're 30 patients deep in the waiting room in the middle of the night, you don't have to think super hard about this. All of this is built for you, either hopefully by your hospital and hospital systems and DC Health. But if you need to sort of tailor it to what you are comfortable with or what you need or have found effective, hopefully this is a helpful framework for doing so. So the things that I recommend having in order are. Number one, sort of a prescription order set. So, whatever dosing schema you decide to use. So, for me, the 8 milligram loading dose up to 24 over 7 days, so 21 trips, just build that as a just your pre-populated prescription. It is written the way you want it. You have your dosing instructions already spelled out, and just saved in your folder, your order set, whatever your EMR calls it, and however it structures it, so you don't have to overthink it. I personally recommend going ahead and just having all of your adjuncts in sort of the same folder or the same set. So whatever you sort of commonly include with the antiemetics, the loperamide, clonidine, sort of whatever you normally would want to do for withdrawal, just go ahead and have those pulled together so you don't have to spend a bunch of time on this, sort of lower your cognitive burden here. I also strongly recommend including take-home naloxone in your order set that you build or in your workflow as you build this. Really, for any patient that comes in with any sort of substance use, I think you should get take-home naloxone, and we'll come back to that in a future episode. But definitely any patient that you are treating for opioid use disorder should leave with a Narcan in hand. All DC hospitals should have free take-home naloxone via like a SAMHSA grant. So if you don't know how to find it, please find out at your facility and please make sure these patients have naloxone in hand when they leave the department. So build out your prescription. Number two is I do recommend spending a few minutes, it doesn't have to be a ton, on building some patient instructions that you can sort of have customized to whatever your dosing schema is and just ready to go. I have included in the show notes here a couple of patient instruction handouts that various programs have used. I've got California Bridge, I've got the Matters Network up in New York State, and then I've got It Matters, which I believe is in Colorado, as examples of sort of what these usually look like. I just, shape it as the counseling that I do in the department with, waiting after methadone at least 72 hours, wait until you feel bad, what are the symptoms you're looking for? Why is it this important to wait with precipitated withdrawal? And then I recommend just having your dosing schema spelled out of, what's your first dose with a spot to write down what time you take it, and then when can you take a second dose sort of written out, again, giving them a spot to record the time and then what their max dose for the day is. And then again, I personally like having the sort of the reminder, do not take this with other sedative medications like benzos or with alcohol or with other opioids, and sort of why. doesn't need to be super complicated, doesn't need to be super highbrow language. This should be very, very accessible language for pretty much any patient. So it does not need to be super highbrow academic. Ideally, this should probably be available in multiple languages. That's not something I'm going to ask you to do because obviously getting a professional interpreter involved in this is a little bit more complicated. That's a little bit more of a hospital systems thing. But I think having at least a framework of these are the things I want my patient to remember, ready to go is a really good idea. I think you can sort of format this a lot of ways. Don't get super in the weeds on how pretty is it. If your hospital or hospital system doesn't already have a discharge instruction like this or a home protocol set up, I think it's fine to at least have sort of a pre-populated just set of instructions that the things that you as a provider really want your patient to know. If you want to save that as a Word document in your email that you print off, if you want to build this into sort of your custom discharge instructions or like a dot phrase or whatever works for you, just to make sure it is accessible, I think any of that is fine. And then the third thing that I recommend, just spending a few minutes sort of getting organized, is all of your community resources. So anyone that you start on treatment, and really anyone that you even consider treatment or that comes in with an overdose, please make sure they at least have information about our sort of community-based resources. I think probably most of our hospital EMRs do have sort of a discharge instruction that includes what resources are available in DC. If they don't, DC Hospital Association does, and DC Health both do have some of those resources available. And we are currently working on getting those centralized and organized a little bit more easily. So if you either don't have access to these discharge instructions, or if you want something a little bit more robust, we're working on putting that together. But I think this is probably the most important part for any patient. Both having the phone numbers and the providers and the clinic locations for treatment of substance use disorder and opioid use disorder, but then also just make sure they have your peer counselor's card or your opioid survivor overdose program worker's card. If your peer counselor is not in the department when your patient comes in, please make sure, if you can, if the patient has one, please make sure that you have a phone number recorded for the patient, either in their chart or in your note. I think this is one of the ones that we can probably help with some as providers, making sure that the peers know who. Where to access a patient to reach out just to make sure they have support and follow up. If they don't have a phone number, some of our peers have suggested just asking where do they hang out during the day? What time are they there? Is there some place where an OSOP coach can meet them and just check in with them and make sure they have the resources that they need? With these sort of community resources, I don't think it all has to be treatment based. Make sure they know where to access low cost medical care if they need it, case management, social workers if they need it, HIV screening, testing, treatment if they need it, harm reduction services, housing assistance services. This is not like an all or nothing kind of thing. Even if they don't want to start buprenorphine, make sure they have access to sort of harm reduction and sort of clinical support and clinical care, regardless of sort of what they're interested in doing that day. I sort of say this because I suspect a lot of us do not know sort of the full gamut of our community resources offhand, which is completely reasonable. We have enough things to try to remember. I think probably all of our hospitals do have some form of discharge instruction or list of these resources, and the peer coaches and the DCHA and some of the other teams working in DC are sort of always working on making sure these resources are organized and up to date. I'm going to link in the show notes some of the links and the sources for you to find these if you do not currently have good access to them. That said, if whatever your hospital has access to, or whatever we have linked in the show notes, does not include something that you've had good success success with, please do let us know. We do want this to be a really robust sort of database of resources that we can all access and constantly improve and make sure is working. We will talk more soon about sort of the harm reduction resources in the community and sort of how we can implement those in to both our clinical care and just making sure that patients have access to those after the ED setting. But I think for the meantime, what we can do really effectively as sort of as clinicians is building out this workflow in a way where even with the sort of imperfect access to resources and imperfect, you know, the lack of a one-size-fits-all protocol, we can go ahead and start implementing this as our best available, even as we continue to make it better. As always, and I've said this a few times, if you have any concerns about these protocols or if you have any concerns about this sort of concept, please reach out to us. I would absolutely love to discuss this with you more.